And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Fun Friday. Each of my guests is discussing a fun and interesting topic, no two of which are related. My next guest tells a true story of survival, adventure, and the most incredible rescue mission of World War II from his book, Lost in Shangri-La. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Mitch Zukoff is a professor of journalism at Boston University. His latest book, as I said, is Lost in Shangri-La, a true story of survival, adventure, and the most incredible rescue mission of World War II. His previous books are Robert Altman, The Oral Biography, Ponzi Scheme, The True Story of a Financial Legend, and Choosing Naya, A Family's Journey. He also co-authored with Dick Lehr, Judgment Ridge, The True Story Behind the Dartmouth Murders. Mitch magazine work has appeared in The New Yorker, Fortune, and many other magazines. He was a Pulitzer Prize finalist for his investigative reporting at the Boston Globe. He received his master's degree from the University of Missouri, where he was a Batten Fellow, at the Darden School of Business Administration at the University of Virginia. He now lives in Newton, Mass., and joining us from Newton, Mass. Is Mitchell Zukoff. Hi, Mitch. How are you today?
I'm great, Bill. How are you?
Well, I am terrific. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy Brain. And this is one of the great untold stories of World War II, and it really surprises me because after 65 years after the war, you'd think that most of the stories about the war had been told, but they haven't. You found this story of Shangri-La. So the first question has to be, how did you discover and research the story of Lost in Shangri-La?
Well, first, I couldn't agree more. I mean, aren't we all under the impression that Steven Spielberg basically owns the rights to World War II?
He and Tom Hanks, man.
Right. They've already bought everything up. And so the idea that there was an untold story, I wouldn't have believed it had I not stumbled across it. I was researching something else related to World War II when I was reading archives from the Chicago Tribune from 1945. And my eyes sort of just lit upon a headline that said, "Glider Rescue in Shangri-La Delayed by Clouds." And I said, what? A rescue of plane crash victims involving a glider? It started talking about cannibals who they were living among. It talked about this hidden valley in the middle of New Guinea called Shangri-La, which I thought was only a fictional valley from Lost Horizon. And the idea that in one story, hiding in plain sight, there was this incredible tale of World War II that nobody seemed to know about. But as soon as I started researching it, as soon as I started, you know, chipping away at it, there was this entire community of people who had somehow been connected to it. A father who had died in this plane crash, the widow of one of the survivors, the chief rescuer, all these people came out of the woodwork, and some were already connected, some I connected the dots, and they had all saved in these sort of, you know, it's like preserved in amber, these stories, these memories, letters, diaries, journals, and waiting for me in Washington was a trove of declassified military documents. And then, we can talk about it later, there was even film. That the idea that in the midst of this incredible adventure in 1945, a documentary filmmaker parachutes into this secret valley and starts filming, and that in the Library of Congress, there is this film, which is now on my website, but more importantly, that all of this was waiting for somebody, for some lucky journalist, and I thank my stars it was me, to find it and start piecing it together literally minute by minute.
Oh, it's a fascinating story. We're talking to Mitch Zukoff, author of the book Lost in Shangri-La. Now, Mitch, just give an overview of the story for my listeners so that they have a sense of the drama and really the heroism that comes out in this story.
Sure. Sure thing, Bill. May 13th, 1945, 24 men and women who are stationed on the island of New Guinea get aboard a plane called the Gremlin Special. Now, a year earlier, Army flyers had been flying over the center of New Guinea, this tropical island just north of Australia, and where their map said there would be a mountain, they looked down and saw this enormous valley. And living in it, completely isolated from everything, were tens of thousands of people for whom the Stone Age had never ended. These are people who hadn't discovered the wheel, hadn't discovered clothing, textiles, pottery. And they were fighting wars with stones and bows and arrows. in the midst of World War II. And so now, once that was found, everyone wanted to see it. So this Gremlin special flight was really a reward, a morale-boosting reward for these 24 men and Women's Army Corps members, nine of them, to take a little bit of time off from the war on a Sunday afternoon. Well, when the plane goes up, the chief pilot, who's a very good guy and a good pilot, I've become friendly with his son, and he leaves the cockpit, though, and he leaves a less experienced major at the controls alone, and it's treacherous flying, and the Gremlin Special, tragically, as it's going through a mountain pass, crashes into a jungle-covered mountain on the edge of this valley called Shangri-La.
Amazing. Now, to me, it's incredible on a number of different levels. First of all, the C-47 that you're talking about was one of the most reliable and sturdy planes that has ever been made. So were they flying in foul weather? Was there a fog that they didn't see the mountain? I mean, here you are, you're flying tens of thousands of feet above the ground. It would seem to me that you wouldn't hit an obstacle like a mountain in your way.
You're right. You're absolutely right, Bill. And the C-47 was kind of the Buick of the sky, this very reliable airplane. But tragically, they all wanted to get a good close view of Shangri-La and of the people, of these little villages, these thatch-roofed huts. So they were flying fairly low through a mountain pass. And in that terrain, there are tremendous updrafts and downdrafts. And combined with that, the island of Shangri-La, being a tropical area and a tropical rainforest, often has clouds covering these mountains. And as pilots say sometimes, you'll find a cloud that has a rock in it.
I see. All right, exactly how I would expect that to happen. We're talking to Mitch Zukov. Now, Mitch, there were 24 men and women on board this plane when the plane goes down. Did everybody die in the plane crash, or were there survivors?
Incredibly, three people survive. A beautiful member of the Women's Army Corps named Margaret Hastings, who comes out. Her best friend has died. Margaret has burns on her leg, cuts on her hands, but is surviving and is okay. The second survivor is Ken Decker, who has a terrible head wound and, in fact, never remembers anything from the time the plane took off to the time he sort of awoke in this jungle. And the third is Lieutenant Robert McCullum, and he doesn't suffer physical injuries, but he, in some ways, has the most awful experience because his twin brother was aboard the plane with him. They were known as the Inseparables. And so when he emerges without his brother, who died in the plane, he is truly, in sort of, you know, the most cosmic way, he is alone for the first time in his life.
Right. Now, tell me, I mean, here are these three people that have survived the plane crash. It's starting to sound a little bit like Gilligan's Island in that they're marooned on this island away from civilization. How did they communicate with the outside world?
Well, at first they don't. There's no way. There's no walkie-talkie, no working radio, and even if it was, it didn't have the range to go 150 miles back to the base on the northern coast of New Guinea. So they're on their own. The first days they're there, they realize they have to figure out a way to survive on their own. And it's only later, when the story tells their arduous trek through the jungle, down a frozen river, or a freezing river, and to a clearing. And only later, when they are dropped a walkie-talkie, can they communicate with planes flying overhead.
Now, how did they know they're in the clearing there? But and it should be noted that this was a path that the B-24 Liberators and planes flew fairly frequently, so it was easy for them to see the survivors once they hit the open area?
Well, they had one advantage, and it was just one small thing. They were able to find in the plane, in the wreckage of the plane, a life raft for the ocean. And it was yellow. It was a yellow tarp that covered the life raft, and they used that. So when a B-17 was flying overhead and looked down in this endless expanse of green forest, this emerald green rainforest, there was this flash of yellow. So as John McCollum said later, a life raft that was supposed to save us in the ocean ended up saving us in the jungle.
There you go. A great story. We're talking to Mitch Zukov, author of the book Lost in Shangri-La, A True Story of Survival, Adventure, and the Most Incredible Rescue Mission of World War II. So you had mentioned earlier in your answers about the filmmaker that was involved in this. Now, there's more to the story. So when they're finally discovered, they realize that they've got this woman and these two wounded soldiers in the middle of the jungle. There's all kinds of warring tribes. They're in the middle of not hostile Japanese territory, but certainly in the middle of the Pacific. They drop in people to help protect them. How does this all happen, and how does the rescue actually get mounted?
Well, you described it perfectly, Bill. They realize that we have no idea how to get them out, so the first thing we're going to do is put more people in. We're going to drop these 11 paratroopers, one of whom is a guy named, the leader of them, is a guy named Earl Walter, who turned 90 this week, and he's a great guy, and he turned over his journals to me to help me write the book. And so Earl leads this group of paratroopers in as they're figuring out how to get them out, because there's no way to land planes in there. There's no way to drop anything in, to get a helicopter in. There seems to be no way out. They start talking about, well, we might have to walk them out 150 miles through this dense jungle. And while this preparation is going on, this guy Alex Khan, this former Hollywood actor, drinking buddy of Humphrey Bogart, drops in absolutely dead drunk because he is afraid to parachute. And he starts filming what's going on with the tribe, with the survivors. And I'll let readers find out what happens themselves, but the plan calls for this, that these paratroopers are going to erect basically a makeshift field goal post, like a football field a goal post, in the middle of this valley. And they're going to put a rubber band on top of this goal post, and they're going to string the other end of the rubber band to the nose of a glider that they drop into the valley. And then the survivors are going to get on board, and then another C-47 is going to sweep low into the valley, 15 feet off the ground, with a hook hanging off its belly. And if everything goes right, and there's a million reasons why it shouldn't, the plane is going to snatch this rubber band and pull the glider up into the sky and up over the mountains surrounding this valley. Now, I don't know how many of your listeners know much about gliders in World War II, but they had a nickname. They were called flying coffins.
And because so many people died in them?
Exactly. Yeah. They were difficult to control in Market Garden, in Holland and elsewhere. The fields, when they would bring troops in, even just landing them, not forget about snatching them back off the ground with people aboard, just landing them was often a death wish, because you could barely control them. You had no engine. And a little bit too much wind, a little bit too much, anything, and these planes would go nose down into the ground.
Now, Mitch, it brings up an interesting point. Who thought of the rescue strategy? I mean, because you've got the paratroopers on the ground. Did they have knowledge of how the rescue was going to happen before they were dropped in, and that was their mission, to guard them and to set up the goalpost?
They didn't. This is so incredible about Earl Walter and these Filipino-American paratroopers who joined him in Shangri-La. They were told simply, we have no idea how to get you out. We have no idea what you're going to be facing. We know you're going to be outnumbered about 10,000 to 1 by Stone Age tribesmen. We don't know much of anything. Who's in? And to a man, each one of them, the first recon division, which was their unit, had a motto, and it was from the Tagalog dialect of the Philippines, and it was Bahala Na, which means come what may. And that was their attitude. It was a very can-do, whatever you ask of us, we're ready for it.
That's incredible.
They were so incredibly brave and not looking for any recognition, not looking for anything except the opportunity to serve, because they felt an obligation because, we had been attacked at Pearl Harbor, but the Philippines had been invaded, and these Filipino-American men wanted to be part of this war effort any way they were asked,
Filipinos were very instrumental in World War II, especially in the war, only in the war in the Pacific. But why are we just now learning about their contributions and their bravery? I mean, Ghost Soldiers, which then became The Great Raid, the movie, now your
Absolutely.
Book. Why are we just learning about it now?
Well, I think there's a certain amount of racism involved, Bill. I can't help but think, and especially as I read some of the stories that were coincident to when this was going on, the stories that were published about this, They would name the guys in the planes dropping cargo in their hometowns and their sweethearts almost, but the Filipino Americans who dropped in were never named in these stories until the very end. They didn't even get Earl Walter, who was an American. His name was often misspelled as Walters, but they were treated as though they were not part of it, and I think it was a terrible and unfair oversight. And there are a number of people who are now trying to make sure that the Filipino Americans who did serve so heroically in World War II get the recognition they deserve. And as you mentioned Gold Soldiers, my friend Hampton Sides wrote that book, and I know he feels just as I do, that the people of the Philippines who suffered through the Bataan Death March and contributed to the war effort absolutely deserve their due.
Absolutely they do. We're talking to Mitchell Zukoff, everybody, author of the book Lost in Shangri-La, A True Story of Survival, Adventure, and the Most Incredible Rescue Mission of World War II. Mitch, I won't give away the ending, but I do want to end on this note. What did you get out of writing the book?
Oh, this was a life-changing experience for me. Bill, I ended up going to New Guinea and seeing the and climbing the mountain to the crash site and interviewing tribe members, indigenous people who are still there, who were children when this happened. And it just, frankly, not to overstate it, but it gave me a sort of a new perspective on sort of our shared humanity, despite where you are in terms of quote-unquote civilization or modernity or how advanced you are. These people whose world was invaded when this plane crashed behaved in a way that I hope we would behave when we're invaded effectively by Martians.
Well, let's hope that that doesn't come to pass. We've been talking to Mitch Zukoff, everybody, author of the book Lost in Shangri-La. Mitch, we've only got a couple of seconds. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
It would be great. MitchellZukoff.com, MitchellZukoff.com. And you can even see the film of what happened in Shangri-La.
It's an incredible story. Mitch, thank you for writing the book. It's a lot of fun for people who like adventure, people who like World War II. We'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.